Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 18, 2018. President Kiir has a warning for airline companies operating in South Sudan.
I have instructed the Minister of Transport, together with the Civil Aviation Authority, to immediately suspend the operation of Southwest Airlines in the Republic of South Sudan.
And a U.S. nonprofit says most South Sudanese refugees are not willing to return home.
Nobody is going to leave those camps and go back to their homeland because they don't believe this peace agreement. There's been peace agreements up till now already, and some of them last hours. None of them last longer than days.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has suspended Southwest Aviation from operating in South Sudan after last week's deadly plane crash, which killed 20 people. The head of the Civil Aviation Association says the problem lies with soldiers stationed at the airport who force airline crew to overload departing planes. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir joined hundreds of people for a memorial service in Juba yesterday to remember the lives of the 20 people who were killed in last week's plane crash in Yerol. Speaking to the congregation at All Saints Cathedral, President Kiir ordered an immediate and indefinite suspension of Southwest Aviation, which shattered the ill-fated plane.
I have instructed the Minister of Transport, together with the Civil Aviation Authority, to immediately suspend the operation of Southwest Airlines in the Republic of South Sudan. And to avoid the recurrences of such incidents, the Civil Aviation Authority should sanction all airlines to provide their manifests and services manual book to know how frequent and last service of the aircraft to civil aviation before taking off.
Southwest Aviation is owned by Sudanese businessman. The September 9th crash is the latest in a string of planes crashes in South Sudan's brief history. President Kiir indicated that one problem contributing to plane crashes in South Sudan is the age and condition of planes, like the Southwest shattered plane that crashed last week.
I'm informed the aircraft is 34 years old. These are the new planes with us here in South Sudan. It was manufactured on November 14, 1984, by Ukrainian Aviation Company.
But officials with the Association of Civil Aviation in South Sudan dispute that claim. Ayi Duang Ayi, a South Sudanese businessman who owns South Supreme Airlines and is head of the association, says several crashes by small aircraft is caused by government security agents stationed at the airport who force crews to board additional passengers at gunpoint.
When the plane is in a bad condition, the captain will not accept to fly it and the engineer will not accept to board it, so that they will go and crash and die with people. The issue at Juba International Airport is that airliners are intimidated at gunpoint to take extra load. Juba Airport needs regulation. Mr. President, withdraw the soldiers at the airport so that airline policies can be implemented fully and so that we do not continue to lose lives.
Duang had a South Supreme Airline plane crash at Wau Airport in March of last year. No one was killed in that crash. South Sudan Transport Minister John Luke Jok has asked South Sudanese to stop speculating about the cause of the Yerol plane crash until an official investigation is completed.
Actual answers will come when the black box is taken and opened and interpreted, transcribed and interpreted. What was happening inside the aircraft? The black box will come up with all these answers. The team that went to Yerol came back with the black box. The black box is with us now.
Officials say aviation experts are working to retrieve information from the black box. In 2015, a cargo plane crashed, killing 37 people, including the crew of six. It was the deadliest crash to have occurred in South Sudan since independence in 2011. Rachid Ibrahim, general manager at Southwest Aviation, told the Juba-based Arabic language newspaper Al Muwaqqif that his company will compensate the relatives of the 20 people who died in the Yerol plane crash. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Germany has donated 11 million euro to the UN World Food Programme in South Sudan to help families build resilience in food insecure areas. A WFP official in Juba says the money will support 180,000 food insecure people in Lakes, Western Equatoria, Warap, and Abyei regions. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino has the details from Juba.
The German ambassador to South Sudan, Jan Hendrik, says the money is intended to help improve the lives of the suffering South Sudanese people so they can eventually take care of themselves again.
The purpose of it is to support the suffering people of South Sudan in this project here from WFP. It's resilience building. So it's a little bit going further than food distribution and so on. It will empower these people to take care for themselves in a better way. To move from humanitarian aid with this resilience towards development in agriculture.
Thompson Peary is the WFP spokesman in South Sudan.
We are targeting 180,000 people. People work to rehabilitate assets. They either create also some assets. These are assets that communities identify themselves and say this is our priority in our area. We are feeding people today, but also making sure that they have enough food for them to eat tomorrow.
Peary says the project targets those who are physically fit to work and produce their own food.
The food that they receive whilst they are working on creating this asset is a form of payment. So those who are not labor constrained, those who are physically able to perform the manual labor to actually do the work, they are targeted and then they work on rehabilitating or creating these assets.
Peary says the donation is meant for long-term projects that will continue until 2021. He says the money will help cover a wide range of activities across South Sudan.
The food for assets activities that WFP is implementing are already underway. However, the resources we've received from the government of Germany today will help us scale up these activities, will help us extend activities. And the money that we've received today will run until the year 2021.
Hendrik praised South Sudan's leaders for signing the revitalized peace agreement last week. He is appealing to South Sudan's leaders to focus on implementing the deal they signed.
Peace is not built on a document you sign. Peace is reality on the ground. Peace is that the women can go to fetch water without being threatened, that the youth can go to school and can study to learn a profession and to work in a normal profession, not as soldiers.
Hendrik calls the revitalized deal a starting point and called on all parties to work responsibly and make peace a reality. Hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese still remain displaced internally and externally under poor conditions. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The president of the Sudan Relief Fund, a U.S.-based nonprofit, is helping families in South Sudan. Neil Kokre says the revitalized peace agreement is not attractive to refugees who fled from deadly violence in South Sudan, adding that a majority of the refugees would prefer to wait until they see genuine peace in the country.
They beg for peace. They just want to live in peace and feed their families and take care of their families. To give you a hard number here, there's almost 12 million people in South Sudan. Today, 4 million, one-third of those people are refugees. That does not take into account the over 50,000 people that have been killed since 2013.
The signing of the peace agreement last week in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, brings in new hope for the people of South Sudan. What do you think?
I will tell you what I think, because I was actually 2 weeks ago in the refugee camps in northern Uganda, where there are 1.4 million South Sudanese refugees in these camps in northern Uganda right now. Nobody is going to leave those camps and go back to their homeland.
Why?
Because they don't believe this peace agreement. There's been peace agreements up till now already. And some of them last hours. None of them last longer than days. And that's why they're going to wait at least a year until they see whether or not this peace agreement holds up. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, his comment last weekend was, this is good, but, you know, we'll wait and see.
This puts a huge burden on the humanitarian operations in South Sudan, because as it is now, the U.S. intervention to South Sudan has been focusing more on emergency than development. What is the impact of that?
You've hit the nail on the head here. Almost all of the massive international aid has been focused on humanitarian assistance than on development aid here. And for obvious reasons, I just said one-third of the people in that entire country are refugees. They're basically just trying to stay alive. They're not worried about infrastructure development here. They're worried about staying alive.
Would this picture that you are painting out of your experience in the country, is there any hope for long-term stability in South Sudan?
Well, there's always hope. And I would say that I have hope because I go there all the time and I'm spending my life trying to help there. And I'll tell you why I think there is hope. The answer is when you look across the border in Uganda, this is a country that 30 years ago was in a very similar situation to South Sudan. You had tribalism, the head of that country was a guy called Idi Amin, a dictator. And now Uganda is a thriving, safe country. And so I think there is definitely hope in South Sudan. But I think some of the players at the top, some of the leaders of those different tribes need to be, at some point they're going to need to be replaced by other people who are truly focused on getting along with other people in the country, other tribal groups. But definitely there is hope there.
If you're given an opportunity to speak, face-to-face with the actors in South Sudan, the leaders in the country, what would you tell them?
I'm not in the political side here. The Sudan Relief Fund is focused on helping the people where they're at here. We build schools. We funded and built the only functioning university in the country. We build and support hospitals and churches. You know, I guess the only thing I would say to these leaders is focus on the poor people that you are you're interested in helping. The poor people that are just trying to grow enough to feed their little families here.
That's Nelly Cockery, the president of the Sudan Relief Fund, a U.S.-based nonprofit organization helping families in South Sudan. He was speaking with me from Washington earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a team of UN investigators accuse the government of South Sudan of turning blind eye to sexual assault. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who has been the kindest person to you in your life?
I think my mom. She's kind, or she tolerates everything that I do. Whether it's being good or bad, she does tolerate. So she's kind to me.
To be honest, there are so many. I cannot really remember one particular one, but there's nobody bad, actually, to me. There's nobody bad, because if somebody does something wrong or bad to me, I think that person is trying to educate me on a particular thing.
The kindest person to me in my life is my friend, whom we have studied together from my secondary school to university life. We're still together. He's always honest, and he's so kind to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. And today we are talking about the failure of South Sudanese government to protect women and girls from sexual abuse and assault. UN investigators have accused South Sudan's government of failing to address an epidemic of sexual violence and rape. The Commission on Human Rights reports few cases have ever been investigated or persecuted in South Sudan. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the Commission submitted its findings to the UN Human Rights Council.
The three-member commission recently returned from a mission to South Sudan, where it heard testimonies of wanton killings and numerous accounts of brutal sexual violence. Commission Chair Yasmin Suka says in Ye County, the commission was told women had been abducted by government soldiers and raped, and that many women who gave birth after being raped abandoned their babies because of the stigma attached.
Women in South Sudan have been treated by government soldiers and armed actors to the conflict, including local militias, as spoils of the conflict. They also experience sexual violence during intercommunal violence between rival ethnic groups clashing over land and cattle, and live with the threat of sexual violence on a daily basis, which is fueled by the lack of accountability and justice for these crimes.
A study last year by the Global Women's Institute and the International Rescue Committee found two-thirds of women and girls in South Sudan have reportedly experienced violence at least once in their lives. Suka says the plight and suffering of South Sudanese women and girls can no longer be ignored. She says they deserve justice and compensation, as well as medical treatment and counseling for the trauma they have endured. She says the failure to punish the perpetrators of serious crimes leads them to believe they can continue to commit horrific acts with total impunity. She warns sustainable peace in the country will not be possible without justice and accountability for serious crimes. South Sudan's Minister of Justice and Social Affairs, Paulino Wanawila Onango, says his government does not condone violations of human rights, and improvements have been made in this regard. He says special protection police units have been set up, and 30 police officers, mainly women, are being trained to investigate cases of sexual violence and to counsel the victims. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Post-conflict countries with high food insecurity are far more likely to relapse into conflict within 10 years if hunger levels are not addressed. That is according to United Nations. This makes the need to address hunger and violence in countries like South Sudan critical, says one former ambassador. Ayendeng Bior has more from Washington.
Ambassador Ertharen Cousin, a former executive director of the World Food Programme, says there is a link between global food insecurity and security issues.
If there is a car that is driving towards conflict, hunger is usually in the car, even if it's not the driver.
The driver.
It's passenger in that car.
Cousin and the FAO director released a joint press release last year that said that conflict is a leading cause of hunger. Violence leads to the destruction of crops, livestock, and agricultural infrastructure. It disrupts markets, which can lead to displacement and creates fear and uncertainty. As the former executive director of the World Food Programme, Cousin says the humanitarian community has had to correct past mistakes and broaden their view on solving food insecurity worldwide.
For a very long time, the humanitarian and development community was focused on kilocalories, getting increasing kilocalories, particularly in emergencies. And we didn't talk about what food we moved. And particularly in protracted crisis, when the household and the individuals are dependent upon humanitarian response, diet diversity becomes very important. Ensuring that you are not just addressing calories, but the right calories, nutritious calories.
Hunger and malnutrition are at historic high levels in South Sudan, according to the World Food Programme. More than half of the country's population was estimated estimated to face severe food insecurity during this past lean season. While hunger can be a factor in creating insecurity, Cousin warns that mitigating the negative effects it may have on security is just part of the solution.
I think it's important that we recognize that in these situations that hunger is a factor, and merely addressing that food factor may not stop or negate the occurrence of conflict. And so the response needs to be more nuanced and to ensure that we are meeting what are the actual needs of the community and the households that are affecting the instability that could potentially lead to conflict.
Instead, Cousin says, an all-inclusive approach to both hunger and conflict is needed.
What we realize is that we need to, and the communities of responders need to work better together to ensure that we have identified what the full needs are of those we are serving, not what we as an institution can bring to the response if we expect to truly address the effects that hunger and those other factors have on the potential for conflict.
Ambassador Cousin was speaking at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies yesterday. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we take you to Jonglei State, where hundreds of students who sat for the South Sudan secondary school examination last year claim school teachers are charging students 2,000 South Sudanese pounds or $10 to see their exams results. The results were released more than a month ago, but some students claim they have not been able to see their results. Deng Gai Deng has this story for VOA from Bor.
22-year-old Biare Chol, who completed his secondary school education at Langbar Modern Academy in Bor, says the National Minister of General Education, Deng Deng Hoch, released the results of last year's examinations several weeks ago. But teachers have refused to let students see how they performed.
The result was out. Then we went to school as a student to go and check the result. Then the results are not being allowed by teachers to tell us. So they're saying that every student must pay £2,000. And up to now, I am still not confirmed my results. The results were out since, but up to now, I'm not yet, I don't know my result, so I'm not very happy.
Another student, Gaya Wow, from Bor College High School, says he too is disappointed that administrators at his school wouldn't let him see his results unless he pays them money.
Some of us, up to now, have not yet seen the results. The problem is we are told to pay 2,000. That is Bor College, to see our results.
Malek Paul Gwit, principal of Doron Secondary School, admits he has demanded 2,000 South Sudanese pounds from a student before he allows them to see their scores.
Yeah, it is true. There are some categories of the money that are supposed to be paid for the result, one of which is there is a national form for students' certificate, the original certificate. There is a form that the student should have to fill. For those who fail, are already informed. So we don't deny for those who fail. These are the first people given a chance to see their result and even be advised to receipt in order to get the paper.
Principal Lake Peter Ayak of Alliance High School denies charging a student a fee to assess their results, saying all students from his school have seen their results.
Our school is not collecting these 2,000 from students. At the part, it was said by the State Minister of Education that 600 SSP is supposed to be collected from each student, such that the original certificate from Jupa should be ordered instead of a student to go to Jupa there. So we are not collecting 2,000 SSP from students.
Ayak and Gwit claim State Ministry of Education officials directed school administrators to collect money from outgoing students. Gabriel Panchol Anyang, director for examination in the Jonglei State Ministry of Education, says the ministry requires a student to pay 600,000 Sudanese pounds for requisition forms, which each student must fill out before being issued an original certificate. He says the decision to charge a student a fee to see their results is being taken by individual school administrators.
What we know as the ministry, when we send forms to schools, there was a form brought from Juba. And that form should be filled by a student for requesting original certificate.
Several parents and guardians are demanding their head teachers allow all students to see the secondary school examination results, regardless of whether or not they have paid 2,000 South Sudanese pounds. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. President Salva Kiir has suspended indefinitely Southwest Aviation from flying its planes in South Sudan. 20 people were killed in a plane crash last week in Yeril. But the head of South Sudan Civil Aviation Association says the problem is not with a lack of safety or poor conditions on planes. He says it's because government soldiers stationed at Juba International Airport are forcing airline crews to overload departing planes with additional passengers not on the manifest. Germany has donated 11 million euro, the equivalent of $12.7 million, to the UN World Food Program in South Sudan to help build community resilience. A top WFP official in Juba says the money will support 180,000 food insecure people in the Lakes, Western Equatoria, Warup, and Abyei regions. Germany's ambassador to South Sudan, John Hendrick, says the money is intended to help improve the lives of people so they can one day soon take care of themselves. And finally, a former ambassador says post-conflict countries with high food insecurity are 40% more likely to relapse into conflict within 10 years if hunger levels are not addressed, according to the United Nations. And that makes the need to address hunger and violence in countries like South Sudan critical. Ambassador Etherin Cousin, who is a former executive director of the World Food Program, says there's a direct link between global food insecurity and security problems. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with J.J. Kang singing in his native Nuer language. We have been listening to Kang JJ singing in his native Nuer language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.